Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Full Year Results 2018 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, the 24th of August, 2018. I will now hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Matt Bekier. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jürgen, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to our 2018 results announcement. I'm joined here by Chad Barton, the CFO, and Harry Theodore, who runs our Treasury and Investor Relations group. Let me start off with the overview on page number four of the investor presentation that we have provided. We are pleased to report strong financial results. You see that our gross revenue is up 16.3% on a normalized basis, and our NPAT is up by 20.3% on a normalized basis. On an actual basis, on a statutory basis, we're down 44%. That just reflects the fact that in 2017, we had an abnormally strong win rate in BRP, and in 2018, we had an abnormally weak win rate in BRP. As you know, these things normalize over time. Now, we think these are very high-quality results. We've got broad-based growth across our geographies. Our investments are performing. Our cash conversion of the reported results to cash in the bank is strong at 105%, and we've been able to demonstrate market share gains in the critical product categories. Further adding to the quality of the result is the strong performance of our BRP business. Turnover is up 54%. We've consolidated our number one position in the market, and we are really pleased to see greater profitability in this line of business through some discipline and excellent outcomes on the credit function and the credit that we've been providing. So it's a positive result. On the back of that business performance and the strength of our balance sheet, the board has declared, and the new dividend payout policy, the board has declared a 0.13 fully franked dividend. That's up 53%. Over the page, I touch on a couple of additional achievements. Page number five. First of all, I want to call out the effective delivery of our capital projects. The critical piece in the transformation of the Gold Coast was the creation and the building of the Darling and the expansion of the main gaming floor. That was done and delivered as promised, on budget and on time. I'm also very pleased that today there is actually a soft turning underway as we speak in the Gold Coast, where we are commencing the construction of the additional tower and an additional tower on the Gold Coast, and I'll talk about it a bit later. What we also achieved last year was to expand our partnership with Charter Hall Group and Far East. Apart from the equity placement, that gave us the opportunity to now start a marketing alliance, and to identify a range of other specific developments that we want to undertake together. Going forward, our capital burden will reduce, and Chad will talk to that in some more detail. But we're very comfortable that with our strong balance sheet and gearing of 1.4 times, we are well-placed to be able to fund all of our exciting development plans. Finally, the start of the year has been positive. We've had broad-based growth across the group. That means growth across all of the products and all of the properties. Particularly pleasing is that we now have better trends in our domestic table games business, particularly here in Sydney, but actually across the group, where the softness from last year, both in terms of volumes and hold, are no longer present. In terms of BRP, it's obviously a short period of time, but it's a very pleasing start to the year as well. Page six shows you graphically how we've been performing last year and what has been driving the results. You see that most of the revenue growth came out of BRP and some additional revenue growth out of Queensland. The most pleasing thing about this chart, though, is the fact that despite the switch to a lower margin of business in BRP, we've been able to maintain our EBITDA margin at about 22%, which speaks to the quality of our cost management. Let me now turn to the individual properties. In Sydney, on page number seven, we delivered an outstanding normalized result. EBITDA of 410 million dollars, For those of you who've been around for a while, you may recall that before we started the investment in the Refresh in Sydney in 2009, the property was doing $200 million of EBITDA. So this is a very powerful illustration of the returns that we can generate on the back of our investments. What drove the excellent result was strong VIP business, which was up 57% in Sydney, but also a good, solid performance in our domestic business. Visitation was up 11.4%, and particularly in slots, as you know, that we're very focused on, in slots we've been able to demonstrate the maximum, a very good performance. Our costs remained well constrained and managed through that period, with total cost up in Sydney by 4.1%. I think it's a great illustration of the earnings capacity of these properties, and we're excited about that result. Let me turn over to Queensland now. Queensland is a story of two properties and two different halves. In Brisbane, we had a soft first half and a pleasing stabilization in the second half, and we feel comfortable about the prospects for Brisbane. In the Gold Coast, that's where we put all of the assets and the investment in. Gold Coast has had a very strong overall performance throughout that period. As across the state, revenues were up 10.5% for the year. EBITDA went back by 8.4%. That's a little bit inflated by the fact that the VIP commissions fell negatively against us in Queensland in that period of time. If you'd normalize for that, EBITDA growth would have been flat. The growth was reasonably broad-based across the categories, but obviously most pronounced in the Gold Coast. VIP was very strong, up 41%, pretty much all in the Gold Coast. Let me now double-click on the Gold Coast, because I know that that's of particular interest. And you can see there on page number 9, apart from the fact that we've been able to deliver the investments on time and budget, pleasing to see that in all of the product categories, we are seeing good traction momentum in the property. We see the slots volume, the slots on the bottom of that, slots volume growing nicely, domestic table volumes growing nicely through the year, and VIP volumes growing as well. So it's been a pleasing start to the monetization of our investment, but we are very, keen to see more growth coming out of the Gold Coast. This is only the beginning of what this property can do. And for those of you who've had time to look at the financial report, I just want to point you to the statutory numbers in the Gold Coast. We had EBITDA of $116 million in the Gold Coast in last financial year. That's up from mid-40s about 4 or 5 years ago. So it shows you how much this property has already improved, but I'm excited about how much more we can do. Over the following pages, pages 10, 11, and 12, we have photos of some of the assets that we've delivered and some of the main events that we've curated in the last 12 months in the Gold Coast, namely Commonwealth Games and the Logies, which we hosted for the first time in Gold Coast. If I'd ask you to turn to page number 13, EGM market share, it's an important metric that we look at because it drives such a big part of our earnings. Very pleasing result, obviously in Sydney. We've achieved a record market share of 9.6%, both through new gaming areas, but also in the mass market. Queensland, very nice growth in Gold Coast as a result of the commissioning of the new assets. And in Brisbane, pleasing stabilization, where we've been able to start to eke out a little bit of growth now that we've put new leadership in place. So it's a positive, the EGM market share is a very positive story. Page number 14 finally touches on the highlights for us in these results. Great year in VIP. As I said, turnover up 54%. What we're really seeing is the return of the junkets. This doesn't take away from our strategy to diversify, but clearly that part of the market, which had been suppressed in 2017, has come back in full strength. And despite the fact that we're doing more business with the junkets, we've been able to improve profitability both through great credit performance, but also through more discipline in our commercial arrangements. You see that front money is up very substantially, receivables are down, and we continue to expand our growth in across all of our geographies. So the VIP business, in our view, has a lot more in the tank, and we are keen to pursue that diversification strategy here further. But it's a positive development for us. So with those sort of highlights, I want to hand over to Chad to take you through the financials.
Great. Thanks, Matt. Good morning, everyone. I'll take you through the P&L in some more detail on slide 16. We'll look at the normalised results first. Matt's already highlighted the strong results with normalised gross revenue of $2.7 billion, up 15.3% on PCP. Growth has been consistent and broad-based with first half revenue growth of 15.9%, followed by second half growth of 14.7% versus PCP. If you adjusted table hold rates in the domestic business to the same as prior periods, second half revenue growth would have actually been stronger at 17.9%. The highlights in revenue performance are international VIP up 52%, strong non-gaming growth of 15.2%, above market slots growth of 5.5%, and whilst tables were impacted by hold in Sydney, Gold Coast tables were up 21.1%. Turning to costs, driven primarily by the volume growth in the international business, gaming taxes, levies and commissions increased by 25.5%. The average gaming tax rate across the group remained consistent at 30.3%. Commissions were up 54.5%, which is in line with the increase in international VIP volumes, and the commission rates were consistent with last year. Operating expenses were up 6.9% on PCP. This reflects the increased VIP volumes, which accounts for about 3% of the growth. Incentives, which were not paid in the prior year, accounts for about 2% of the growth, leaving 2% OPEX growth in the domestic business. To put this 2% OPEX growth in context, it includes domestic volume growth, cost pressures such as wage inflation of 2.5% to 3%, as well as a 16% increase in costs from electricity and utility rates, as well as adding new capacity in the Gold Coast post-opening. So we've maintained cost growth to about 2% in the domestic business through benefits of our continuing efficiency program. This has led OPEX as a percentage of revenue to drop from 41.5% in FY17 to 38.5% in FY18. Normalised EBITDA of $588 million is up 14.2%, with second half margins expanding faster at 16.4% compared with 11.8% in the first half. Depreciation and amortisation of $187 million is in line with our prior guidance, increasing in line with the completion of major capital works in the Gold Coast and Sydney. Net interest decreased 17.7%, primarily driven by the restructure of our US PP notes during the year, but also $3 million in interest savings following the strategic placement. Normalised net profit after tax of $258 million is up 20.3% on PCP, with a 60 basis points margin expansion. Looking at the statutory results, the international VIP actual win rate of 1.16% compares with a 1.59% win rate in the prior year. This drives a $115 million reduction in statutory EBITDA versus PCP. So the international VIP players have had a luckier year. The win rate improved in the second half, we're at 1.26%, and that's close to our long-term expectations of 1.35%. And I will say we are tracking higher than normalised win rate in 2019 to date. Significant items of $36.7 million is primarily driven by the costs associated with the US PP debt notes restructure, which we disclosed in August last year. Also, as flagged in the first half results, the costs associated with the Gold Coast pre-opening and launch expenses amounted to $6.5 million. Now turning to the balance sheet. Balance sheet strength remains with gearing at 1.4 times, cash collection ratio of 105% of EBITDA, which was up slightly due to timing of movements in working capital balances around year end. Trade receivables increased by $29 million due to higher IRB activity in June, and receivables past due were lower than the prior year, and bad debt expense as a percentage of revenue is at record lows. Property, plant and equipment increased close to $300 million, mainly due to the Gold Coast redevelopments. Net debt is at $678 million and down $110 million on last year, reflecting the $490 million equity placement, offset by increased capital expenditure and joint venture contributions. Turning now to slide 18, we successfully restructured our USPP notes in early FY18. The restructure has reduced the cost of these notes by over 400 basis points. So therefore, our guidance for interest for next year is in the range of $35 to $40 million, which includes a reduction in capitalized interest given reduced CapEx. Capitalized interest was $10 million in FY18 and will go down to around $5 million in FY19. We have $580 million of undrawn facilities at year end. Just looking at CapEx now, CapEx peaked in FY18 at $477 million. $287 of this relates to growth projects, with the remaining $190 million as maintenance CapEx. CapEx will decline materially over FY19 and 20 to between $300 and $350 million each year. Depreciation and amortization of $187 million was within guidance and up 14% on prior year following commissioning of new projects, as well as accelerated depreciation on assets being refurbished. FY19 is expected to be in a range of $200 to $210 million for D&A. So if I now take you through to slide 19 of the pack. To conclude from a financial perspective, the group has delivered strong financial results again with a further 20.3% growth in normalised NPAT to achieve 19.2% compound annual growth rate over the last 4 years. This growth has been pleasingly broad-based and underpinned by good performance across our domestic and international businesses. We have good cash flow generation, our balance sheet is strong, which enables us to continue to execute our strategic growth plans. And to reflect the confidence the board and management has in the business, the board has approved a new minimum dividend payout ratio of 70% of normalised NPAT. This has seen dividend lift by 28% for the year to 20.5 cents, with a final dividend of 13 cents and a yield slightly over 4%. I'll now hand back to Matt to conclude the presentation.
Thank you, Chad. So much about the year that was. Let's now turn our minds to the upcoming developments this year. I'm on page number 21. I've already referenced that a strong start, or a positive start to this financial year, where we're seeing good revenue growth across our properties and across all of the lines of business. In terms of our priorities going forward, they remain essentially unchanged. We will focus on improving earnings across the group. I want to focus on two aspects of that. The particular focus for us will be our investments in driving that performance through marketing and gaming, as well as actively managing the disruption from our capital programs, particularly in Sydney. The second priority is to deliver the next stage of capital plans. And finally, the third priority is to commercialise the expanded strategic partnership with Chandra Falcon Far East, where we expect to get active in both the VIP business as well as the mass market in the first half of this financial year. On page number 22, we look at the capital expenditure forward profile that Chad has already highlighted. I would like to just make the point that from our point of view, we are becoming increasingly comfortable with the forward capital program. There's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, we have delivered meaningful projects in recent history on time and on budget, and we know we can do this. Secondly, you know, our tendering is delivering good results. I just want to point you to the result on Tower 1 in the Gold Coast, the additional, the 700 key tower that we're starting to build from today, where we've been able to come in 8% below the previous guidance on a fixed price contract with Builder, which is a great outcome. And the final reason for our increased confidence is that in this financial year, we'll be tendering very substantial proportion of the Queen's Wharf project. So whatever residual risk there is with Queen's Wharf, that will be materialized, dissipate this financial year. So we're very comfortable about the direction that we're heading in. Looking at what's happening in the properties, page number 23, all the focus in Sydney is of course going to be on the summer room. The work on the permanent facilities underway. We've moved our customers into the temporary facilities, and while it's very early days, we've only been in the temporary rooms for 1 week, the feedback so far from customers has been positive. It's a big credit to the team that has done outstanding work on the mitigation strategies. I think generally the best that I've seen in my career in this industry. Great work around member engagement, how we recognize members across the property. And the temporary facilities, in my view, are probably superior to the previous facilities in many respects. And I look forward to showing these facilities to investors over the coming weeks. Page number 24 has some of the photographs about the facilities that we've now commissioned. Turning to page number 25, Gold Coast. Gold Coast is progressing well. As I said, we're starting today to build the first JB tower. The point that I just want to impress on everybody is this is the first of five towers, up to five towers that we can build on that site. And, you know, we're really keen to see the first tower has been a big success from a commercial point of view in terms of the sales. We're keen to see how much more we can do on that front. But it's obviously a positive development, and it just reflects our belief that the Gold Coast has a lot more potential, medium and long term, than probably many people think. Page number 20, over the page on 26, we show what the tower will look like and one of the apartments, as well as a graphic on some recently completed works in the Gold Coast. Finally, on Queen's Wharf, on page 27, the work is progressing well. Demolition was completed on time. Excavation is progressing well. In fact, based on the metrics that we look at, we're probably a little bit ahead of where we ought to be. So that's progressing well from all aspects. I just want to remind you that for Queen's Wharf, we've been able to enlarge the resort by about 25%. And we think that's a very positive outcome because it will allow us to de-risk the revenue sources and build a better resort. And we can do that without impacting on the business case and delivering and continue to deliver good returns out of that project. So we're very excited about the upside that we will have out of Brisbane. The pictures on this chart 27 show you some of the progress that's been made. Finally, page 28, just to summarize what we're trying to do for our investors here. On the left-hand side, a recap of our strategy. Now, we are making investments in all kinds of attraction drivers, and we're trying to make these investments in a capital-light fashion through our partners and through mixed-use developments. These investments drive visitations to our sites, both from locals as well as international customers. And this visitation drives earnings, which then allows us to invest more into these sites. It's a virtuous circle that we're trying to build here. In terms of our delivery, on the right-hand side of that chart, I think there's increasing evidence that our investments are delivering above-system growth. Chad referenced the strong growth of the last 4 years on the top line. I think the share gains and swaps are further evidence. We've got a building track record of delivering these investments on time and on budget. Our partnership with Chad Cook and Far East supports these long-term opportunities, both from a capital point of view, but also by allowing us to do this delivery of these projects. And you know, collectively, this improves returns to shareholders because we now don't have to wait till everything's done, but we can actually start to pay increased dividends through the cycle. That's, in a nutshell, what we're trying to do. With that, our presentation concludes. I'm now happy to take questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound key. Your first question comes from the line of Don Carducci from JP Morgan. Please ask your question.
Good morning, everyone. Just two quick questions for me. The first being, can you provide a little bit of color on how much contribution there was from Far East and Chow Tai Fook in driving second half premium mass and VIP turnover?
Yes, zero.
Good. And then my second question would be, what's the early feedback? And can you talk about any impact of the Sovereign Room from its movement and maybe any color on Vantage players with their new fit out? And this is in reference to the comment from the previous half on player behavior being less time on table but sustained visitation.
Yeah, look, the it's just been a week. And as we look at the trading numbers, you know, because we moved the customers into new facilities, there's obviously excitement. I think it's fair to say that there's been a few detractors of ours in the market that have been spreading news about terrible facilities that would be in operation for a little while. The consistent feedback that we've had from our investors, from our players, has been that this is a lot better than they had expected. And in fact, as I said, it's much better in some respects, for example, access out of the car parks than the previous facility. And it's starting to build real excitement about what the permanent facilities will look like. In terms of the, you know, the critical criticism, it's not as big as the previous Sovereign Room. There's not enough outdoor areas. But, you know, the feedback has been very positive. Now, what we have been doing in the lead up to that was, and in response to the softer table numbers that we had experienced in the late in the first half and the second half, was we dialed up our hosting programs. We put on more customer relations executives. We improved and enhanced our marketing to the top end of the customer base, and all of that is getting traction. And we will continue to manage that customer base with enormous focus over the next, you know, the next period as we open up the facilities.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Matt Ryan from UBS. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Hi, Matt. Hi, Chad. My first question is just in regards to your operating costs, both what you reported in the result and also the outlook. So I think the second half cost growth was a lot better than what I was thinking it might have been, and I think you've highlighted just 2% underlying OPEX growth. So just sort of curious on whether you think that's sustainable, and also maybe if you could just talk through the drivers of what might be happening over the next 12 months. I'd assume that outside of the pre-opening costs that you've identified in the Gold Coast, there might be some inefficiencies at that property which you could improve on over the next 12 months. So you just provide any color on that?
Sure, thanks, Matt. So look, FY19, looking forward from a cost perspective, and then as you pointed out as well, FY18 from underlying kind of around 2% cost growth in the domestic business. So we clearly remain very focused on our efficiency program that we've been running over multiple years, and that's been able to offset some of the cost growth. And I've pointed out, you know, when you've got utilities going up 16% year on year, the only way for us to offset that is to continue to focus on our efficiency program. So then you look forward to FY19. As we've always said, we expect costs to reflect volume growth. The incentives that were in FY18, the relief there, they're now in the numbers, so I'm not expecting that to be an impact into FY19. But probably the thing that we are very focused on is, you know, in the Gold Coast, we require us to actually stay very focused on the customer experience, and that's the investment that we've made. So our service levels are a bit higher in the Gold Coast to make sure that the visitation that's coming, the experience that the new players are having as they come to the Gold Coast is matched by our service levels. So we expect over the next 12 months we're probably going to be running a little bit higher from a cost perspective as we then fully get to the ramp up in kind of 12 to 18 months' time in the Gold Coast. Matt's already highlighted a little bit what we're doing around some of the service levels in Sydney around Sovereign, making sure, but that's initial investments that we're making to mitigate the disruption. And then obviously we'll have the standard inflationary pressures around wages and utilities again in FY19. As I said, our aim is, with our efficiency program, is to effectively offset the impact of CPI on our business through efficiencies year on year.
Okay, that's really helpful. And then just a question on the dividend. So a pretty large increase year on year, and we've obviously been given the guidance of a minimum 70% payout from here, but just curious on how do you actually think about where you want to pay out? The range, you know, clearly between 70 or 100 is pretty big, so just if you could provide any colour on the drivers and what you're thinking about there.
Okay, I don't know. Sound vague here, but this is something that the board will obviously decide every time around in line of the performance. The reason why, you know, we went with the dividend that we did was the board looked at the performance, said it's pretty good, we're pretty happy with how it's going and where we're heading, and we have good momentum. And so the 13 cents of the second half reflects the fact that, you know, it is above the floor, 70% minimum, and the fact that we've got good momentum. And so you should assume that the board will continue to be mindful of our shareholders' needs and the performance of the, in light of the performance of the business. But 70% is the minimum that we set.
That was
a long sentence that said nothing, I realise that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at your balance sheet appears to be pretty strong. Earnings are going in the right direction. As you flagged, CapEx is now coming down. So, I mean, are you sort of pitching towards some form of dividend yield relative to where the share price is? Or, I mean, how are you actually thinking about it? Because there seems to be quite a lot of flexibility in what you could be paying out moving forward.
Yeah, that's exactly how we like it. I won't be clipping. I don't want to flip. I can't give you any more information here. There's a bunch of factors that go in here. It's a business momentum. It's how the actual win rate in the VIP business works for or against us. They all get into the equation of how we look at the dividends.
Sure. Okay, and just a quick one. You gave some guidance pretty recently on Queen's Wharf. And I guess now you're talking about getting a better than expected outcome in the Gold Coast. Is it too short term to think that conditions have actually changed between the time that you gave that guidance and now, or you think it's just a incremental positive that you've been able to get a better outcome of the Gold Coast? This is in reference to what you might be getting in Brisbane.
We are in the market tendering now for a very substantial piece of the Queen's Wharf development, and that will give us the best guidance of where that's going. I think the interesting thing about the Gold Coast is just, you know, this is the first time we've actually worked very closely with our partners, particularly Far East, and we've been able to leverage their capability, relationships and processes. And that has made a material difference to us. And so when I said on the call that we're getting increasingly comfortable, that really reflects the fact that when we got into the joint venture with Charter Falk and Far East, we knew that we were getting more than just a capital partner. We wanted a partner that could help us with de-risking the development, the delivery of these developments. And I'm seeing the benefits of those relationships now. And that's how I would interpret the 8%.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nick Basil from Gold Sachs. Please ask your question.
Good morning, Matt and Chad. I just wanted to delve a little bit deeper into the difference between EBITDA growth on a normalised basis between Sydney and Queensland. I think you might have called out that VIP commissions were working against you in Queensland, and if you adjust for that, you may have been flat for the full year, but I guess that's still some way off the leverage you saw in Sydney, where EBITDA was up very strongly, 27%. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, maybe what the differences were there. For example, was Treasury a bit of a drag relative to Gold Coast? Could you provide a bit more context on that?
So I think, thanks, Nick. Look, I think the big thing is the VIP commissions and the normal, and the, I guess, the impact of revenue share deals have had on our commissions, and we note that in the presentation. If you look at it, last year there was a benefit of around $15 million on the commissions that were in Queensland. So when Matt said if you look at normalising it, you're effectively flat year on year. That's the biggest driver of the EBITDA movement in Queensland. And this year, effectively, Sydney's got the $20 million benefit. It swings around between properties where players play, what rebate programs they're on. So that's really the biggest swing within that. Now, Queensland also, from more of a cost perspective, as I've highlighted in the second half, you know, as we've ramped up Gold Coast, we are probably running a little bit higher on cost there, as I said, to make sure the service levels are there to be able to delight the customers as they're coming in and experiencing the new property.
So just to clarify maybe then, would you say it's that Sydney has benefited from some of the VIP commissions being a bit lower than what they were in the prior period?
Yes.
Because 27 versus flat for Queensland, adjusting for that, is still a huge difference relative to the normalised revenues across non-gaming and gaming, which were, you know, if anything, stronger in Queensland.
Yeah, so Sydney has benefited from the commissions on the revenue share deals, where Queensland in comparison to last year is down because of it.
Okay. Nick, the only other thing I want to say in the context of this business is, one, you know, we now are seeing the return of the junket business, and you know, the new rate cards that we have implemented will start to insulate us a little bit more than in the past in terms of margin pressures. And it also means that in terms of our credit performance, you know, while it was an outstanding performance, I think as there is more and more junket business, you know, the credit performance should continue to improve because we pay more up on the commission, but we lose less on the bad debts. So the economics in the VIP business are actually overall relatively favorable for the first time in a long time.
Okay, great. Just one more question in relation to slots. You saw very strong growth across both Sydney and Queensland. Could you perhaps explain a bit more about what the features driving that were, whether it was new product versus player spend or utilisation?
So I think, Nick, it's a mixture of all that. Absolutely, within each of our properties, we are very focused on our product, what our product is, new product, exclusive product. We've got the launch pad that goes on in Sydney that launches new product. We've got exclusive casino-only slot product that we're putting in that has been very successful for us. We've got, probably pronounced this the wrong way, Xingjing Baojing is coming in very shortly, will be exclusive to us in New South Wales as well, which is one of the leading games in Macau at the moment. You then match that up with the elements that we're doing around loyalty across all segments of our loyalty program except Diamond. We've moved forward quite significantly in all segments with time on device. As Matt's already highlighted, in Sydney, visitation was up 11%. We're seeing time on devices up as well associated with that. And then we have also changed our jackpot strategy over the last year as well. So there's not, you can't necessarily sit there and point to just one thing in particular that drives it. There are multiple things that we look at across our slots and our loyalty program that will drive the, and has driven the increase we've seen in the last year.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Larry Gandler from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Thanks, guys. Look, just on that visitation in Sydney, 11% growth. I think that's another year of good of a strong number. I'm just wondering if you can highlight the last couple of years if you have that, or whether that 11% is an acceleration. And then maybe just talk about how you drew 11% more visitation.
So, Larry, yeah, visitation has lifted a little bit in the last year. In comparison, we've seen good visitation increases that have gone on over the last few years. But yes, 11% is a little bit higher than the trend rate we've seen across it. There's obviously, again, I'll go a number of things. Loyalty program, we drive. We have, I have some stats here. We've got 235. So we're up about 7% on our loyalty program year on year as well in terms of numbers of active members. So we've seen that go up quite substantially. We're also trying to do more and more, as you know, around our tourism strategy, being relevant within our cities in terms of, with the right tourist operators, making sure we're getting visitation onto our property as they are visiting Sydney as well. So, but I'd say, the biggest thing really comes down to what we've been doing around loyalty.
Okay, that's good. And just with Gold Coast and the commissions there, I hear you on the comment that there was some, win rate issues in the commissions or normalization issues in the commissions, but they were pretty consistent throughout the year sequentially, first half and second half. So I'm just wondering if generally the commission rates in Gold Coast will be generally higher than Sydney?
Larry, no. The answer is no. We have one rate card.
Okay, it is one rate card for the – that's yes. What I was going to ask.
Yep.
And you said, you mentioned, Matt, you changed the rate card recently. Can you just say when that change occurred and what were the major changes there?
We put a rate card through that is more in line with the rate cards – that other players in the market have. We were promised a little bit more generous, and the rate card came into play in April.
You were previously more generous, and now you're more in line.
Now we're more in line. And,
yep.
You know, the profitability of this business is obviously driven by the rate card, and then it's by everything else you give away on top of the rate card. And so instilling a greater discipline here has been very important to us. And as you know, we've got a new leadership in the space that we feel very comfortable with to drive that profitability in that business.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Anthony Longo from CLSA. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Chad. So just a quick one on Queens Wharf Bridge from me. So you mentioned you're tendering a substantial portion of work this year. Are you able to give a feel for or whatever metrics you can on that front in terms of percentage of work done or dollars, if you could?
So what we'll be tendering is the bridge is we've got some early contract involvement on the bridge. That will be tendered later in the year. By the way, the $120 million that have been kicked around are fanciful. That is nothing like the number that we have in the budget for and have confidence in spending on that. The component that we're tendering will be the building of the basement as well as the core of the property and the shell and the cladding. So that's everything except the fit-out of the property. And the reason why we sort of pulled that apart is because, you know, we think that the market continues to soften, the forward market, and we didn't want to tender everything now when there's still a little bit of life in the market. We think that the market in Queensland will soften further from a construction point of view, and so pushing that out a little bit will serve as well. The shell and core will represent, once that has been let, 50% of the total cost of the resort will be locked away.
Probably just to reiterate again, the message Matt you gave earlier in the presentation was, you know, we're ahead on the Gold Coast by about 8% on the first tower. The same quantity surveyor actually did the budget on the Gold Coast is doing the budget work for us on Queen's Wharf. So, you know, we're just trying to give a little bit of an idea. We're using the same quantity surveyor and we've come in 8% under on Gold Coast.
Don't quite lock that in yet, though.
No, but I'm just...
Okay.
No worries. I appreciate that. Just another question on taxes and commissions. So understand that so the tax rates are broadly in line given the increased volumes, but commissions are up, as you'd sort of expect. Are you able to give a feel for it? So I know you mentioned that commission rates broadly have been sort of in line with previous trends, but are you able to give a feel as to what... I guess where I'm coming from is the rate, taxes and commissions as a percentage of revenue, that ratio is, you know, well and truly up on the PCP. Are you able to carve out how much of that is, I guess, volume sort of kickers that have come through?
Nearly entirely volume related. We have, I think, about roughly around 20% of our volume is on revenue share or hybrid revenue turnover based deals. So nearly all of the commissions that we see is based upon revenue. Actual commission rates are actually very consistent with prior year. And the tax rates were effectively flat year on year as well.
Yep, no, excellent. No, thanks very much. And finally, in terms of the use of the junkets, is that proportion still similar to what you saw in the first half, so around about that 85% mark?
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough. And sorry, last one from me. Sorry, in terms of the Sydney tables results, I mean, it's pleasing that FY19 started off positively in terms of those hold rates. Look, I appreciate that it can be volatile, but from your perspective, is there anything that you can do from your end to manage that volatility, or is you know, those hold rates essentially just luck and you can't do anything about that?
Look, at the core, it's luck, but, you know, the luck normalizes more quickly if you have great facilities where customers spend more time at the table. So we experience more volatility when people come play for a short period of time and then they're up or down and then leave. So part of our expectation is that the win rate will, you know, stop to fluctuate once we're in a permanent facility and we experience, you know, a greater volume of play.
And it's worth having a look at the appendix on page 34 as well. It gives you a longer-term view of what the hold rates have been within Sydney PGR. And you can see the trend line's actually been increasing over the years, as Matt said, which highlights the work that we've been doing on the proposition within our PGR over multiple years. You can see, however, then how low certainly the second half and FY18 as a whole has been on our hold rates in the PGR there in Sydney.
Yeah, no, excellent. That's all that. I appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Wilson from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Thanks very much, Matt. I was just wondering, just on that hold rate in the private gaming room, I mean, what did you see in that second half? Because it is quite surprising that it did drop so rapidly. And what have you actually seen it recover to in the first part of 19?
So first half 19 is above trend. So we're above where we were last year. So we're tracking above that at this point in time, Mark. Look, you know, if there's anything that you know in FY18 from the tables perspective that we highlighted previously, we've seen, you know, visitation of the PGR being quite strong. time there has actually been strong. What we've actually seen is, you know, some customers from a diamond perspective, your top end of your loyalty program, their visitation's been a little bit lower, but the overall visitation in the room's been the same. It's just some of your bigger players have been potentially travelling overseas or elsewhere over the last year.
So Mark, let me just add one more thing. There has been a little bit of a move from very, very large players who no longer who are now domiciled in Australia and are now playing in the private gaming rooms at very high levels that we would have not seen 3 years ago. They're basically playing at IRB type levels. And that just creates a bit of volatility, which, you know, shouldn't impact on the hold because they're playing the same game in the long run, but in the short term, it does create volatility. So these are people that, you know, when you're in the international program, play $300,000, $400,000 in hand, then upload that in the private game rooms.
Right, okay. And so was there anything that you have done?
In the long run, that's a great development, right? So this is a category of global super whale that's developing, but it just creates volatility.
Right. And do you expect that volatility to continue?
Yes. But, you know, it doesn't mean it has to be below the trend line.
Yes, okay. So what are you doing to that effect to actually, you know, keep visitation up and basically time on table?
Well, you know, so the sovereign room, the first thing we've done is, we've done this also for the temporary facility, we've now created a special additional tier within the sovereign room, which we call the chairman's, and that really caters to that very high end, domestic high end. And that's where we, you know, are very, very deliberately lifting service levels and the experience in the community.
Right, okay. That's great. And
I think we just lost him, Mark.
Hi. Your next question comes from the line of David Fabris from Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Chad. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts as to why the Gold Coast market's been soft since April on the slot side. Is it that you guys are taking share or are there other factors at hand in that market?
Look, I think clearly in this period of time, right, this time of the year, being the winter month, the Gold Coast is typically seasonally a bit lower than you can see, obviously, through the warmer months of the year. But, you know, it's nothing that we're seeing significantly that's out of trend from what we would expect. I mean, we've given you the stats on our market share numbers. They continue to be strong and have been lifting in the Gold Coast. So, yes, potentially we are taking some more share there as well on top of that. But, you know, seasonally-wise, we're not very concerned with where we're seeing spots within the Gold Coast at the moment.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And just on probity, can you give us an update on how that's progressing with your JV partners, Chow Tai Fook and Faris Consortium?
Their application is in, and it's not with the regulator.
All right. And just one last question for Chad. Just with that accelerated depreciation, is that ongoing into FY20? When does that stop?
No, so it's only FY19, so it's about $10 million of it in FY19, and then that accelerated depreciation then is finished.
Okay. And sorry, one last question. Just on the capitalised interest, does that only relate to the Sovereign Resort, or is there other CapEx works in there as well?
Primarily Sovereign Resort for next year.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
David, sorry, you should have a look at page 9 in the presentation, and in the bottom left box there, it gives you the acceleration in volumes in slots in the fourth quarter. So we're certainly seeing the volumes quite strong from a slots perspective.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Monique Rooney from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Chad. I've just got a question on the VIP outlook. Obviously, looking ahead, you'll be lapping some pretty strong numbers, but I'm just kind of wondering what your view is on Australia in the context of global VIP, and could you maybe talk a bit more about your plans with Chow Tai Fook and Far East and what you plan to do there on the VIP side, just because I guess some feedback I've got is that, you know, that there's a lot of wealthy individuals that will, through Far East and Chow Tai Fook, will look to gamble exclusively with stars.
Thanks, Monique. Look, the my comment about the VIP business really reflects the fact that all of Australia is still only about 3% of the global VIP market. And if you look at what's happening in Macau, that market continues to expand very nicely. What we've observed is that there's nobody that we see here that hasn't played in Macau for a couple of years before they start to travel. And so consistent with the outbound tourism trend, I expect that more and more people will start to travel. And so the outbound accessible market to us will accelerate faster than the growth in Macau. It's just a maturity. So that's a very positive development. And we that's one of the main reasons why, you know, we are building significant hotel capacity in each one of our locations. And certainly, you know, even for Brisbane, I should say, you know, 3-4 years ago, I was dubious about how big that VIP market could be. I think the feedback we're now getting and the confidence that we're getting is that could be actually a lot larger than we thought, which is more in line with what our partners thought all along. Now, in terms of our marketing alliance with Chow Tai Fook and Far East, we've concluded, or we're in the sort of final stages of doing a lot of prep work. And we will be launching two separate campaigns, if you want, or approaches into that customer base. One relates to the premium mass with a non-gaming offer that will be marketed into the customer's loyalty base. And we've had, we've made good progress in working with Chow Tai Fook about how we can market into that customer base and what we can market. And that will happen in the first half. And then separately, what you referenced, the VIP program, we've had great support from the principals of Chow Tai Fook and Far East, who personally are getting involved here in developing a program at the very, very high end for some of these large players. And that, again, will launch in the first half of 2019, this financial year. So we're looking forward to, you know, see how that goes. Don't expect that to need to explode. All these businesses need to be built over time, but it's an exciting additional opportunity that goes on top of all of the organic opportunities that we have in front of us.
Thanks for that. And I might just have another. I know you took some of the launch costs in the Gold Coast below the line, but were there any kind of one-time costs that were above the line?
Not really.
Look, the reality is, when you launch these new assets, there's some specific costs that you're allowed to take below the line, identify as launch costs, which are clearly paid. But there's an efficiency when you launch a new product, and we very deliberately overstaff the hotel. You know, we continue to overstaff the hotel because we can't get one shot of bringing a high-end customer to the property. And you know, there's inefficiencies in the food and beverage operations until we run them in. So that's just now something for us over the next 6 to 12 months to drive in and get to greater efficiency. So those overstaffing costs are in the normal operating costs.
Correct. So it is purely defined with pre-opening costs below the line. Before we've opened versus the ongoing costs are actually in the last quarter's numbers.
Yeah. So, if you look at, I think if you benchmark the pre-opening costs, you will find that they were pretty modest, particularly in sort of casino world standards.
Okay. All right, great. And maybe just one last one from me, probably a bit more left field. But look, I did notice there have been some recent articles about Hard Rock looking to come to the Gold Coast and build a second casino. At the same time, I know the government's also saying that they're not going to issue any more poker machines in the Gold Coast. So could you just talk a bit about, your kind of view on those, allegations that they'll be coming and talk about how, your view on that would be great.
So there is no process at this point, formal process at this point underway towards it. There is a second license kicking around, and that goes back to the Queen's Wharf process, essentially. But there's no process for the Gold Coast. There's a live process in Cairns, but there's not a live process for the Gold Coast. In terms of Hard Rock, look, I'm not going to comment in great detail other than saying I encourage you to actually go and visit some of these venues and have a look at what they're doing, get a better feel for, what they're really doing. It's a locals casino. That's very much what they've been doing in the US. In terms of the no extra pokies, that is a positive development from our point of view, because we've been saying for some time that we think the market is not big enough for two large scale resorts. If you pull pokies out of that, it's going to be impossible, I think, to actually build a meaningful resort of any size in that market. So, I can't give you an ironclad guarantee that there will be not a second license or no process will be kicked off, but with the parameters that have been set, it looks very dubious.
Well, and just add, I think, Matt, the clubs have already come out and claim they're not going to sell any of their licenses, right? So clubs have said that already, no more additional licenses. You've already got what's quite a saturated market from an EGM perspective. So it's 18 EGMs per 1,000 adults, which is higher than Brisbane after Queen's Wharf, and also higher than Sydney and Victoria. So the only place that they're going to be able to try and get slots would be through the pubs, which I think is going to be difficult to get anything of a size and scale to make sure an investment like that would return appropriately.
Okay, great. Thanks for that.
Okay, I think we've got a final question.
Yes, we have a final question from Rohan Sundram from MST. Your line is now open.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Chad. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, just on the JV CapEx guidance, how should we be thinking about the resi sales proceeds that come through? Is that in that guidance, or will that come at a later date upon completion?
No, it's not in that guidance. It's the gross CapEx, but it includes our joint venture equity contributions. Right, so it's a lower amount. So as an example, I think it's around $30 million for Tower 1 in the Gold Coast.
And then when the apartments settle,
then we'll get
you get that back plus whatever profits you make out of it.
Yeah, so that'll be at a later date. Understood. Okay, and just coming back to your comments around junkets, should we be assuming, are you looking to take on more junket relationships, or are you looking to do more with the existing junkets that you have at the moment?
Both.
Okay.
I think the trends that I tried to describe affect all of the junkets in Macau, and they will all have players who will be ready and want to travel more into Australia. So we will want to work with more junkets as well as the existing junkets. But we will maintain our credit control. So one of the things that has served us exceptionally well over the last 4 or 5 years has been the investments we put in. We now have over 10 people in Asia doing nothing but credit. And that investment is really paying back, and we don't want to lose that.
Well, and probably adding to that, just to remind people as well, Matt, is credit is separated from the sales and IB sales team. It's a separate credit risk function like you'd suggest within the bank, separated from the marketers and the salespeople versus the people making the assessment of how much credit's appropriate for individual players.
Okay. And are you seeing any issue at all, any impact from China capital controls? I know the data would suggest otherwise, but is that still an issue at all?
That issue has been in the market in our numbers for the last 4 or 5 years. I think I've suggested to you in the past that the customer who comes to Australia needs to get a visa, needs to go through all kinds of AML procedures that they don't have to go through in other places. So they probably have cleared funds, access to these funds outside of China because of businesses and other relationships, much more so than players that only go to Macau or other places in Asia. And so therefore, I think we are playing with a subset of players with greater liquidity.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Chad.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. I think that was the last question.
There are no further questions. Yep, there are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
All right. Jürgen, I think we're done. I see no further questions in the queue. Thank you, everybody, for your attendance and your support. And I look forward to seeing you over the next few days. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.